The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We are coming to you live from Central Texas in Central New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, it was a huge day in Trump world. The defense is rested in the hush money case down in Manhattan because Judge Merchan would not allow their expert testimony or expert witness to provide expert testimony.
Unreal. I mean, this is just getting ridiculous, Timothy. I'm so glad they've rested at this point. But that part right there is, just going to continue to fuel the fire of Americans that are looking at this, seeing it exactly for what it is.
Well, in this case now absolutely will be reversed if they if the jury somehow in some alternate universe finds sufficient elements of a crime have been committed and votes to convict Donald Trump, because Judge Merchan would not allow the Federal Elections Commission expert witness to testify as to the federal election law, but yet he let Stormy Daniels talk about it. He let Michael Cohen talk about it. None of them provided expert testimony, and yet they were allowed to poison the jury with incorrect statements about federal election law. And the case really comes down to this. If you're going to allege that this hush money payment, which was recharacterized as legal expenses, was somehow a violation of election law, it fails right there, because the payment was made within the window before the election, that the report isn't due until 30 days after the election. So there's no way that making this payment could have been kept from the public, because the public had no right to know it until 30 days after the election. So we all know the whole thing's nonsense, but legally this thing utterly fails, and it fails because of Judge Merchan's bias. If there is a conviction, it will absolutely be overturned. But that's just in the one case. Judge Aileen Cannon released more documents, unredacted more documents in the documents case down in Florida. And in that case, Donald Trump has moved for dismissal based first on the fact that the raid on Mar-a-Lago was unconstitutional, and secondly, because of prosecutorial misconduct, Jack Smith tampering with evidence, etc. But Brian, it's even worse than that. One of the documents that Judge Cannon unredacted today shows both that the FBI authorized the use of deadly force in that Mar-a-Lago raid. FBI authorized the use of deadly force on the home of the former president. And wait for it, Governor Ron DeSantis knew they were coming. He got a heads up from Merrick Garland 3 hours before the raid. Garland said to him, "We're coming." And Ron said in reply, "Thanks for the heads up." This just keeps getting more and more disgusting. And Ron DeSantis's political career is officially over.
Yeah, there go any question marks about whether he'll be VP or not at this point. I'm going to guess very much not. And what does that actually mean? You know, it's not like Donald Trump is, you know, in some 3-bedroom house and he's going to answer the door in his boxer shorts with his pistol. He has Secret Service agents around him. So what is going on with an FBI that can set itself up and give the rules of engagement, which allow it to get in a violent gunfight with other federal agents? I mean, just imagine if that would have happened, what that could have turned into. And it makes me wonder, what other warrants are they serving with this rule of engagement, and why?
Well, Brian, I think it's because maybe he's not under Secret Service protection. Maybe he's under private security protection because he doesn't trust the Secret Service. Who knows? But the fact that FBI would authorize deadly force on the raid of a former president's residence is just, it shows you that there is no low to which the Democrats will not stoop. And speaking of our democracy and how we've been funding democracy over in Ukraine, President Zelensky is officially a dictator. His term of office ended last night, and he has suspended elections and is now ruling under martial law. So much for democracy in Ukraine.
Yeah, that's the kind of democracy that we're defending. I mean, that to me just indicates that they'll do that here also if they wanna and call it democracy.
They sure will. Again, no low to which they will not stoop. And for all your latest news, did you know there are many ways you can watch or listen to TNT? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on X, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on today's News Talk, TNT.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And now here with all the latest from the Cannes Film Festival is TNT's UK news editor, Basil Valentine. Basil, welcome back to State of the Nation. What's going on in the south of France?
Well, it's a tough gig, as they say, Timothy, but somebody's got to do it. Yes, I've been forcing myself to pay the occasional trip to the Cannes Film Festival over the last week or so. And just like any good tourist, I've got a few holiday snaps to show. So if we can put up the first picture, it doesn't matter which one, any of the pictures. There we go. Well, that's Cate Blanchett, who little did I know until I went to that Q&A, is a UNHCR ambassador. He's a United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees ambassador. And that particular event, there's the panel, was at about making films for displaced people and human rights. It isn't all glitz and glamour, though, at the Cannes Film Festival. It's one of the biggest events I've ever been to. That's a nice shot of some of the infrastructure there on the seafront. The beach is covered by expensive installations, turning the beach basically into luxury lounges where various events take place. And that's a view just back from the seafront of some of the bars and restaurants in what is a particularly attractive town. So, yeah, like I say, awfully sorry. There we have some people behind the barrier, and you can see the famous red carpet there going up to the Festival Palace in the distance. Kevin Costner was on that red carpet a couple of days ago for the premiere of his new film, Horizon, a sprawling three-hour epic Western. That is the first in a series of four such films. It's going to last 12 hours in all, if you've got the time for that. But I'm afraid to say, even though he appeared on the red carpet with five of his children, aged from 13 to 40, which he's had with two different wives, the film itself was panned by the critics, overlong and frankly boring. And the same, I'm sorry to say, applied to the other blockbuster, Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's latest $120 million offering, which has also been panned by the critics. In fact, I was talking to one producer who said that there isn't a single film in the entire festival that's really set the whole thing abuzz. No single film that everybody's talking about. There are, of course, literally hundreds, if not thousands, of screenings. It is simultaneously a trade fair where, you know, people selling services, location services, script writing services, production services, etc., go to network and find clients. It's also a competition with various different prizes offered for all sorts of different films, the famous Palme d'Or, of course, and then it is also one big party. And I've never been to anything quite like it, frankly. And I think it'll be a great place for TNT to live stream from next year.
I love this idea.
I think Hesh and I will volunteer. Yeah, right, Hesh?
Yeah, feel free to have us come along. We'd love to see it.
Heck, even just to be a roadie.
Yeah, we'll even roadie for you. Absolutely, Timothy. I saw one writer over at Vanity Fair, Basil, say that Kevin Costner's Horizon is more like Waterworld, then Dances with Wolves. And anyone that remembers the history on those two movies and the success versus failure of the other might step back before signing up for a 3.5 hour journey into part one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a tale that I'm a big fan of Westerns, by the way. The Wild Bunch is one of my favorite films. I think the Westerns of the sort of mid and late 20th century, some of the best films ever made, including The Spaghettis. But I have to say, haven't we seen it all before now? And I'm not sure that Costner's retelling of the emergence of the West after the Civil War brings anything much new to the table. That seems to be most people's objections to it, though. Costner himself, of course, has a fling with a woman 30 years younger than him. That's obligatory if you're the writer, director, and star.
Well, it's hey, if it's your project, sure, why not, right?
He mortgaged one of his houses to the tune of $36 million to raise the money needed for the film. So he needs it to be at least a partial success. Or I don't think he's going to be homeless. We don't have to weep for Kevin yet. But he's gambled big on this one.
And you have to wonder, though, whether the panning is because of his political views or whether it's on the merits of the film. What is the favorite so far for the Palme d'Or?
That's a very, very good question. It's not one I can answer, quite frankly, Timothy.
Okay. Let's try this one. You mentioned The Party. One of the best bellwethers for the economy is always the yacht game down at the harbor. What kind of yachts are we looking at? How robust is the scene down there?
Well, I've been staying a few miles down the coast for my sins in Antibes, and the whole of the sea, basically, for miles around, is peppered with huge yachts. And remember, it's the Monaco Grand Prix next weekend up the other end as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, this really is the playground of the rich and famous. I haven't been on any of the yachts, I'm sorry to say. Perhaps my invitation is waiting for me downstairs. But there are literally just dozens of huge yachts up and down the coast. And, you know, they seem to get bigger every year, I think. Mark Zuckerberg has invested in something 1,000 feet long. I mean, some of these things are just basically giant penthouses floating on the water. You can hardly tell you're on board. But I mean, hey ho, to some extent, they are remarkable examples of engineering and design. I don't particularly want to own one, but I wouldn't mind having a look round. The film I do want to mention through a serendipitous meeting is I Am Gitmo, which isn't in competition or being exhibited here, but which is now on release, due for premieres in the very near future, made by Cinema Libre. And the film details the excruciating torture of some of the still near 30 people held in Guantanamo Bay without charge. A lot of people seem to think that Gitmo has been closed, but I can assure you it hasn't. And Philip Diaz, the writer-director of the film, was in interview with our very own Lembit Opik at the weekend. And viewers and listeners can go and find that for a replay. It's tremendous work, a very difficult subject, and Philippe hasn't held back from the horrors. You know, a lot of these people were simply swept up off the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan in the hysteria of 2002, 2003. None of them had anything to do with any terrorist attacks on the United States. People were grassed up by their neighbors for rewards, for cash rewards. It really is one of the most disgraceful episodes in modern American history, I'm afraid to say. And they're officially classified as non-human beings, which means, of course, that they could be treated in subhuman ways. And completely memory-holed. Nobody talks about Gitmo anymore, do they?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people think there's no one there. I'm glad that's coming out. I'm glad you're here reporting on it. And by the way, if you're out there on your super yacht listening to State of the Nation right now, be sure and contact Basil Valentine. We would like him to be, he's going to be waiting at the pier asking permission to
that's
come
right.
aboard.
Basil Valentine at tntradio.live. I'll keep an eye on my inbox or, of course,
Basil. You have to learn how to play this. You have to have a little bit of American chutzpah. You put on a hat, and you wait until a little later in the evening when people are halfway into their cups, and you just go in and you tell them you're Michael Caine, and boom, instant entree, you'll be the life of the party.
Well, I might get away with being his son, particularly in these spectacles, but Michael himself, I think, is about 90 now, so...
I know, but you know, they won't know the difference, come on. They're Hollywood types. All right, Basil, thank you. Keep doing that hard work. I know it's onerous. I know it's tedious, but you're doing your darndest to bring us the best right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
Robert Fico is not just any prime minister in the European Union. He happens to be the only leader, or one of the only leaders, at least, that's genuinely outspoken and does not support NATO's proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. Surprise, surprise, he gets shot in public after official appearance there. They have apprehended the shooter, who's now in custody. And, you know, looking back at my history books, I can see some parallels here to Operation Gladio in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, a strategy of tension by NATO intelligence to thwart certain European leaders at the time. This was during the Cold War. Well, things are a little warmer than cold right now in Europe, so Operation Gladio looks like it's operational.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Out of Ireland, the migration system may be tightened over a spike in international protection applicants. So what we're seeing here, the cabinet basically discussing introducing urgent measures to tighten up the migration system in response to a dramatic spike in the number of international protection applicants who have arrived in Ireland this year. We've got a total of, I don't know the exact date of the printing of these statistics, but at the time this was written, a total of 6,069 people seeking asylum between January 1st and April 12th, which, you know, maybe if you're in the States here, it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but you got to keep it in perspective. That's an increase of almost 80%. On numbers from a comparable period in previous years. So joining us now, our friend, our TNT colleague, host of Locked and Loaded, Rick Munn. Welcome to State of the Nation. Welcome back.
Great to be back again. And more shenanigans and skullduggery to discuss on the Emerald Isle concerning this business of immigration, migration, whatever you want to call it, asylum seeking. It's got lots of names, but it equates to people flooding into countries, busting systems, and who knows who they are half the time. We can't verify their identities, but hey, come on in anyway. It's a big place, Ireland for all, Ireland for all, Ireland for all. That's the mantra. So they got what they chanted for. Everyone's piling in here now, Hesher.
Funny how that works out, isn't it? So where are they all coming from? Because here in America, we've got people coming from somewhere between 130 and 160 different countries. But is it more specific in Ireland?
Let me say this, guys. It would be easier for me to list where they're not coming from. So they're not coming from Hawaii, and they're not coming from, the Congo. They're coming from just about everywhere else. Nigerians are coming here. Somalians are coming here. Albanians are coming here. Georgians are coming here. Hell, anyone's coming here. Anyone that can get themselves onto a plane or a boat. Remember that film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy and Steve Martin? Well, I think that's they're going to reboot that in 2024 about the Ireland immigration crisis. They're coming here by plane, train, and automobile, come hell or high water, mate. It's crazy. They're coming from everywhere, quite frankly.
Well, this is a coordinated attack on the Republic, just like it was against the United Kingdom, 20, 30 years ago. The United Kingdom has fallen, but England had a distinct culture. Scotland had a distinct culture. Wales had a distinct culture. Ireland, they don't anymore. Ireland has a distinct culture, and none of these people, it's not that people are coming, it's not that immigrants are coming. It's, the United States, our whole culture is based on, the concept of the melting pot, and we've got Italian neighborhoods and Irish neighborhoods and German neighborhoods, and everybody contributes a little bit to the culture, right? The Germans give us Christmas trees and the Italians give us parades and on and on. Irish has a Ireland has a distinct culture, and that that culture is being not only diluted, it's being destroyed, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing, guys. The argument that's always ruled out against people that speak out against this, but Ireland, you know, people fled away from Ireland during the potato famine. The Irish came to America and helped build New York, and on and on and on it goes. Correct. Contributions were made to society. And when the Irish people arrived in certain places, they went there to work. So when boatloads of them came into New York, into Manhattan, they didn't sit around all day doing nothing or sitting on the dole rattling social security checks and asking for free accommodation, free housing, free this, free that, free the other. They came to work. I have no problem at all with people coming from another country into another country to work, if that country can sustain them, and if there's a need for that labor. And let me stretch that out a little bit further. I have no problem with asylum being granted to people that are genuinely fleeing from war. If the other people in that country can be accommodated, we've taken care of our own homeless, we've made sure our own unemployment's on point, and everything else is going well with our own society, then if we have capacity, then let us bring in more people. But we don't have capacity, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have anywhere to put them, we don't have any jobs for these people to do, or else they aren't being economically viable. So that's why there's a big problem here at the minute. It's not like the Ireland of old, it's not like the immigration of old, because these many, many people that are coming in here are coming in illegally, number one, and number two, they're not coming to contribute, they're coming to leech and to take, and there's only so much of that people can take.
Rick, let me see if you can draw some parallels here, because you know what we're experiencing here in the United States. We not only have a wide open southern border, but all our beaches, all our ports, all our airports, our northern border, they say it's porous. It's not porous. It's just open, you know. Yeah. It's not the enemy's not at the gates. Yeah. It's in the Trojan horse, and the Trojan horse is in every state. But as they come over, you know, process-wise, they say, I'm here to claim asylum, right? Those are the words that it says to say on the application that our very own government, you know, gives them on a phone that they give them that goes with a you know, an ATM card that has $5,000 to $10,000 on it and a bus ticket. You know, they give them all this stuff. We talked about this last time. And as far as we can tell, there's no you know, there's no auditing of their claim of asylum. There's nothing to say, oh yes, you know, there's no evidence that this person is actually seeking asylum. Sometimes they got a backpack with an Xbox in it, to your point. So is it similar there? Is the government handing out all these same sort of free goods, and are they not auditing and checking these claims of asylum?
One of Ireland's ministers, a menace of a man called Roderick O'Gorman, put a tweet out in, I think, 9 or 10 different languages, encouraging people from different parts of the world to come to Ireland. Ireland is welcoming. We welcome people. We welcome. But then when people arrive, there's nowhere to put them. So yes, people are arriving. They're rocking up here en masse, and there's no security checks. What if they have no identification? They're supposed to be deported, but there's only a very nominal amount of people are actually deported from the country when they actually arrive. And of course, to actually get refugee status, you have to go through a series of checks. So until you become an actual refugee, you're deemed to be an asylum seeker. So really, an asylum seeker is just a stepping stone to getting refugee status. But very, very few people, I mean, in England, for example, a lot of people are converting to Christianity from Islam, because they think, well, if we're Christians in a Christian nation, it's going to strengthen our cause. And then a lot of people say, well, I'm gay. And if I go back to Iran, they'll throw me off a building. I'm gay. When they're not gay. And how are you going to prove it? How are you going to prove they're gay? You know, there's no, a Rorschach test to take to do that one. And I'm not knocking gay people. I'm just saying people are using homosexuality as an excuse to stay in a country because they say, well, they'll kill me, they'll stone me, or they'll throw me off a building blindfolded if I go back home again. Oh, well, we can't send you back to that again, can we? So any old cock and bull story will do to get people to remain in situ. And many of the times there's no way of proving the veracity of what's actually being said. So they just stay. And then it just adds problem upon problem, compounding problems upon problems.
Well, they're doing the same thing here, Rick. We have a loophole that if you are the victim of a crime, we will fund you, house you, get you lawyers, everything else, and make it better. If you're illegal and you're the victim of a crime, we do all these things for you. Plus, we give you a visa and you can stay here. Well, people are paying other people to commit crimes against them. So we just had a situation where there was a fake carjacking at a service station, and they did it in the wrong state. They did it in Texas, where a bystander pulled out his weapon and went to defend the person getting carjacked, killed the carjacker, and it turns out that they were in cahoots. It was a phony crime to get this man a visa.
Well, you know what? If they obviously haven't watched that movie, Taxi Driver, with De Niro. So, you know, you got to be careful who you're messing around with, especially in the Lone Star State when everything is bigger. And you know what they say, only two things come out of Texas. And I'm not going to say what those two things are, but a lot of people are carrying guns in there as well.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I couldn't believe that when I saw that story, Timothy. That's just amazing that, you know, to kind of tie those two together, that, you know, identity politic, people here illegally and in other places illegally understand the identity politic that drives policy and then create, you know, new identities, new cottage industries of, you know, mm-hmm. subgenres of crime. It's really interesting to watch all the loopholes being exploited by people that realize we're not running on any sort of morals or law here. It's basically, you know, cultural warfare and identity politics. Rick, hold
we're
the line
clever monkeys.
For you right after this headline from today's News Talk TNT.
Turn on the news.
I have a little news flash.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. FDIC Chairman Barton Grunberg announced his resignation following a scandal over allegations of a toxic workplace culture at the banking regulator. A federal judge has decided to reopen the sentencing hearing for David DePapp, convicted of assaulting Paul Pelosi because DePapp was not allowed to speak during the initial proceeding. President Joe Biden leads in campaign funds, according to new FEC filings, with over $141.5 million in cash on hand between two political committees as of April's end.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Rick, tell us a little bit about how this is affecting, you know, the citizens of Ireland. I've been, you know, reading some stories, doing some research for this, and I see that sometimes when it's announced that there's a large group of people coming in or that a hotel is being, you know, repurposed or something like that, oftentimes people will show up to, you know, voice their concern. And here in America, we've got, you know, veterans living in the street and the homeless population, just absolutely absurd. I mean, what kind of grievances do the people in Ireland have as you know, to how they're being treated?
Well, I've never seen any mobilization like the mobilization that I'm seeing at the minute. And I've been living here for, 51 years almost now. I've never seen people coming together against something like they're coming together at the minute, especially in the Republic of Ireland, with this whole business about the open border. So basically, when you see rallies, they tend to be large rallies in big cities, people out protesting, and they get big numbers in and then they go away. That's not what's happening in Ireland at the minute. You're having multiple rallies frequently in towns and villages right across Ireland. Rather than have one big rally against this, for example, in Dublin that they might aim to get 100,000 people, 200,000 into, you're seeing local people, even down to village level, old women, old men, mothers, fathers with prams, with children, teenagers taking to the streets to protest. So they're trying to brand them as right-wing, you know, xenophobes and, you know, Nazis and fascists. But it's hard to paint a picture of a group of old women standing there with walking sticks, you know, that have lived all their lives in Ireland and pay their taxes and never committed a crime in their life. It's hard to brand them as a bunch of fascists whenever all they're simply saying is, listen, we're worried, we're concerned, with a questions. The government aren't answering our questions. And when we protest against this, the government shove these people into our communities anyway. So it's starting to get a little bit more argy-bargy over here. There's starting to be more violent confrontations there. And I do believe, listen, the people coming into the country are simply pawns in the game. The government is solely behind this. Like, the Biden administration is solely behind that lack of any, not even a net, or not even a porous net across America. There's nothing. Whose fault is that? It's the government's fault. You can't blame the Mexicans, the bandidos, for wanting to come in and invade America. If the doors are open for them, it's like a burglar walking past the house. The windows are open, the doors are open. You can't blame the guy if he wants to help himself to a plasma TV. The onus is on the householder to make sure that the property is secure. The onus is on the American government and the Irish government and the British government to make sure the borders are secure, or you're going to get people coming in taking advantage of it, which is what we're seeing both in America and in Europe.
Yeah. And what about crime and drugs? We have a huge ramification of these policies here in this country when it comes to crime, overdoses, drugs, and a number of other social problems. But those ones are pretty high on everybody's list. Is it similar there?
Well, yeah, we have, of course, our illegal drug trade over here like everybody else does. We haven't been hit as hard as America with things like fentanyl, isn't it? That ultra killer drug that's out there. We don't have the same crack cocaine problems out there. What we have is probably chronic alcoholism. You know, we've always been fond of a drink here in Ireland. So you're more likely to see an Irishman dying of, whiskey poisoning or too many Guinnesses than you are of a fentanyl overdose. But it's coming here, and some of the characters that are arriving in the country are bringing dubious connections along with them, and we are seeing more drug-related crime, certainly more violent knifings happening over here, and shootings, spikes in sexual assaults as well. But of course, the government say that it's nothing to do with the fact that the borders are open and people are flooding in, men predominantly are flooding in without being vetted. It's you can't possibly collate those two things together. But the bottom line is you can't get away from it. There's some kind of a connection there, to the extent of which we don't know. But yeah, the drug thing, it's getting worse. It's certainly not getting any better. And the open borders isn't doing anything to help that.
Rick, you just used one of my favorite Scrabble words, argy-bargy, and took me back to the classic Squeeze album. So what is all of this influx of people, what kind of effect is that having on, for example, the traditional music scene or the pub scene? Or what's the daily cultural life? What's the impact on Ireland's daily cultural life?
Okay, there's still, of course, traditional Irish pubs that with, traditional Irish music in them. They're still there. However, the hospitality industry has been decimated, and the tourist industry has been decimated because, think about this, a lot of small Irish towns and villages, the accommodation is being taken up, bought up by the government, and they used to house unknown men. Okay, that, number one, takes away from available rooms in those towns and villages. And of course, would you want to go and stay in a hotel if you found out that 65, 70 men were staying there? You don't know who they're from. Would you want to go and bring your family to somewhere like that, or go out at night in a town and a village like that, a small town and village with these men milling around doing God knows what? So it's killing the tourist industry, and it's also killing businesses here, because if tourists aren't coming in, don't forget a lot of Irish tourism is around pubs, restaurants, yeah, Eating out. But if tourists aren't coming there, then those businesses are closing down because the migrants that are coming in aren't going out and funding three-course meals and spending buying rounds of Guinness at the pub. No, they're doing their own thing. So it's having a strangling effect, Timothy, on what's going on with Ireland's pub industry and the tourist industry. This is killing it. It's killing it.
Well, as you said, the shops and the crafts, right? They're not buying flat caps or Erin Isles fisherman knit sweaters either.
Correct. So this is a massive knock-on effect. And listen, Hesher, I think you mentioned this at the beginning. Proportionality is very important here. So you guys have had millions of people pouring in under the Biden administration. We have actually had hundreds of thousands coming in here in one way, shape, or form over the last few years. But Ireland has a very small population. The population of the Republic of Ireland is only about 5 million people. The population of the North is about 2.5. So you're talking the entire population of Ireland is only 7.5 million people. What is it, 380, 400 million odd live in the US? So,
well, put that into perspective, Rick, I think it's still less than before the potato famine.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. One of the questions that's been brought up, or one of the points that's been made in here, is that Ireland's punching well above its weight in the amount of people that it's bringing in. So the EU's saying, well, everybody has to do their bit. Everybody has to do their bit. And Ireland's saying, well, we're doing our bit. But proportionately speaking, we're doing way more than what our bit is. And of course, when the potato famine came as well, it was engineered too to get the Irish people out of America. They had no option but to flee, for example, to America. And when they got there again, let me bring it full circle, they worked. They worked. They didn't get free housing and free medical care.
They literally built the Erie Canal, digging it by hand with shovels and picks.
Well, they had to, you know, because that's the work ethic that needs to be there. So proportionality is very important too, guys. You know, we're being hit hard, proportionately speaking, too. The numbers are nowhere near close to the U.S. numbers. But then again, our population's minuscule compared to your population as well. So it's having a real bad effect.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine, you know, because we're looking at what's going on here, and it's like we've had two entire Irelands dropped in our country in the last, you know, 24 months, probably more than that actually. But you know, again, you look at those percentages, you look at the cultural effect, you look at all the downstream effects, and you know that whole thing that you just said made me the whole time I was thinking, wow. This is like a nation destroyer's dream to have this happen on top of COVID. So it's like first you had COVID shut down everything and all the tourism. And then just as, you know, things are supposedly starting to recover, you're dealing with this influx and these numbers. Yeah. It's just it's a perfect disaster, an imperfect disaster, unfortunately. Rick, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your expert analysis and perspective here on State of the Nation. Be sure and check out Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn. Rick, any final thoughts before we got to let you go?
No, just let's keep an eye on this. Let's keep sounding the alarm about this one, guys, and let's hope that sanity is restored. But with the trajectory that we both seem to be on in our respective countries, it's not looking particularly good. But then again, that's part of the plan. That's what they want. It's controlled demolition of our society, destroy everything and then build it back better if they get their way.
That's right. Well, we're not going to let them have their way if we have anything to say about it right here at State of the Nation, on Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn, and right here at Today's News Talk, we're TNT.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. The type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energised by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. To everybody in the type 1 diabetes community, no matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
I'm Belinda, and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song, and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile, and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on Today's News Talk, TNT.
Joining us now to discuss Bidenomics and the disastrous effect it is having on regular Americans is managing partner of Chapwood Investors, Ed Batowski. Ed is a wealth manager to celebrities, pro athletes, and other high and ultra high net worth individuals. Welcome back to State of the Nation, Ed.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Ed, you know, the thing that people don't understand about the 1% is how fluid it is. People enter the 1%, they drop out of the 1%, but pretty much everyone can agree that everyone aspires, if not to make the 1%, to at least do better. But we've got some statistics out of the fast food industry that show just how weak our economy is at the base, at the lower levels. We've had 21.5% official inflation over the last 5 years. Of course, we know it's more than that. But people in the lower tax brackets, or the folks who eat fast food, got hit with a 77.4% increase in prices since 2019. That Big Mac that was $3.99 in 2019, it's now $7.49, 87.7% increase. You want fries with that? Well, medium fries, which were $1.79, are now $4.19. That's 134% increase. Maybe you, like I, prefer a Whopper to a Big Mac. That's even more expensive. It started out at $4.19. It's now $7.79, an increase of 85.9%. As prices are the same at Taco Bell, Chick-fil-A, In-N-Out Burger, and Jack in the Box, the companies studied. The silver lining is maybe people will stop poisoning themselves with fast food, but I'm worried, Ed, that it's a canary in a coal mine, and it shows just how weak our economy is and how we're making it even more difficult for people to climb out of those lower tax brackets and enter the upper tax brackets.
Well, I'll tell you, Tim, I don't think someone's trying to do this. This is just a natural progression of Bidenomics. I mean, Bidenomics has brought this on, and Bidenomics is the equivalent of stagflation. So if you want to say Bidenomics, say stagflation, and that's rising prices, slow economic growth, and low unemployment, or, you know, high unemployment, I should say. And, you know, so when you look at the prices of these things, you know, they've gone up. You know, inflation has gone up 20% since Biden has taken over, but a lot of that has to do with housing and so on. But food outside of the home has gone up tremendously. And, you know, I don't really know if someone's doing it on purpose, but they're doing it. And it is happening because of the natural supply and demand economics that are going on in this country.
Well, I think the $15 to $25 minimum wage for, or $15 to $20 minimum wage for fast food workers in some states certainly is playing a role.
Oh, without question. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, more of his policies that are damaging, you know, not only to the fast food industry, but to every industry. Yeah, I mean, I go out to dinner now and I know it's going to be $50 for my wife and it's $50 for me, no matter where we go. I mean, it's $100 just for the two of us to go out to dinner. Yep. Or lunch. I mean, the other day, you know, she ordered a salad with chicken on it and something else, and it was like, you know, $27. I just couldn't believe, you know, what we were getting for our money.
Yeah, it's gotten really insane. I mean, you're in Texas like I am, and, you know, I came here in 2015, and when the wife and I got here, it was like we really, really felt the difference between California and Texas. Really a lot. I mean, when we drove out of that California marker line, it was $5 a gallon for gas. And we got here and it was like $1.99. And we were able to eat out, you know, like you were saying, something like that, you know, 30, 40 bucks, maybe $20 a person, $30 a person, 35 if we're really having a good time, you know, not having to work, want to add a cocktail to it or whatever. Now it's $100. It almost doesn't matter where you go. It's like there's this huge gap between fast food, which is, you know, now like what it's just an insane price. Timothy just ran it down versus, you know, a meal out, you know, with table service and everything. There's like this, you know, $50 gap in between there where people are just must be saying to themselves, well, I may as well go get, you know, table service if I'm going to be in the over $50 range anyways for a meal.
Right. And the one thing that really kills me is the tip where that stare down happens, where they bring you that machine, you put your credit card in and they turn it around and it says 18, 20, 25%. I'm like, oh my goodness. And they stare at you and you're staring at them. And then somehow you do custom and you do 12% and you feel like you're ripping them off, even though the prices have gone up. So what they get paid goes up as a percentage because the wage, the amount of money that you're being charged has gone up. So the amount of money that they make goes up.
Yeah. In fact, you know, you just gave me a great idea for a little video, of that. You can have like an old West stare down. You know, I'm thinking like out of one of the spaghetti westerns where you close in on the person's eyes and it's a guy within the waitress with the tip machine, right? Look, I took my nephew and a friend out to lunch. I wanted to connect the two of them. My friend was a former wet diver. He set the world record for the deepest welding dive at over 1,000 meters, and my nephew is being graduated from high school in a couple weeks with a certificate in welding. So I wanted to put them together. We went out to the golf shop at a local state park and had hamburgers. Well, the burgers were $15 or $16 each, depending on which one we got, which is standard everywhere now. And my friend had a beer. I had a beer. That was it. And then there was strawberry shortcake on the menu, and you said, "Oh yeah, we'll have three strawberry shortcakes." I didn't realize until I got the bill that the strawberry shortcakes were $14 each. $14 for some strawberry shortcakes, and it was good, but it wasn't that good. The total bill with tip came to almost $150 for the three of us, and it was just burger and strawberry shortcake and a beer out at a local state park restaurant. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and this is happening to every industry. The fast food industry or the eating out industry is the worst. I mean, those prices have gone up so much. But you look at everything, you know, you take gas prices and you look at the trickle down that happens as a result of gas prices being higher. They then add on charges to everything else. So the cost of everything has gone up. You know, nowadays, you know, I used to laugh about how I like to stay at home and watch Netflix on Friday night. Now I feel like I'm saving my butt, staying home watching Netflix on a Friday night. And my wife looks at me like, you know, I'm a bore. And I'm like, well, think about that salad you had with that chicken. You know, but you really have to take a moment and think about where you're going to spend money and things that you used to do without thinking about it. You now have to really think through.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I was looking at this earlier today, and you can kind of look at it from a, you know, 100,000 a year plus income bracket, right? So Walmart, they're saying now when they're looking at Walmart, it's luring more upper income shoppers who are in that $100,000 a year bracket. And I saw something similar, you know, with fast food. It's like the clientele is actually changing. So you've got, you know, people that were, you know, doing okay, upper middle class, whatever 100K used to be considered. And now they are having to sort, it looks like, you know, the stats show that they are downgrading, you know, where they get their stuff and maybe looking more at necessities than wants.
Yeah, I have my own index called the Chapwood Index. It's an alternative to the CPI. And I list the 50 biggest cities and what their cost of living increases. That's the key. It isn't just the cost of living. Like, Brian, when you moved to Texas, you knew what the cost of living was. But the increase is what kills you. So when you sit there and you look and say, well, my goodness, you know, this has gone up 12% each year. You know, it only takes, you know, a number of years before you're 48% higher than you were, you know, previously 4 years before that. And that's what the real true cost of living increase is. Take the CPI and put that aside because that's not a relevant statistic anymore because they manipulate that. But really study what your cost of living increase is. And when you go to Oakland, it's about 14% a year, the increase. You know, so going back to California and then, you know, in Illinois, it's about 12% a year. New York, it's about 12% a year. Florida is about 10%. State of Texas is about 9%. And that's the increase each year. that you have to factor in.
Wow.
So, Ed, that's all the doom and gloom. But here at TNT, we like to be solution-oriented, or at least give people a little bit of hope. How can people in this kind of economy tuck in their horns? You mentioned reducing spending. How can they make it to those upper tax brackets? How can they preserve their wealth just against inflation and not lose money to inflation? What's their best strategy?
Well, make sure that you have investments and have those investments that pay income. And I've said this last time I was on, talking about utilities, and utility stocks have done very, very well over the last couple of months. They're up about 15% year to date, and you're taking half the risk and you're looking for twice the return. You're looking for growth and income. So that's what I would continue to put money into, are utility stocks.
Excellent. Are there stocks that should be avoided right now as things are changing and dynamic and high inflation? Where do you recommend people don't invest?
Well, I would avoid small cap growth stocks. A lot of times people will try to buy these small companies that they think are going to accelerate, and you know, they're selling at $5 and they think they're going to go to $7 or $8. But the small cap companies should be avoided because they borrow more money. And I don't believe interest rates are going to be dropping anytime soon. In fact, they could actually go a little bit higher. And that's going to proportionally hurt small cap growth companies more than any other category out there.
That's also going to hurt bond prices, isn't it?
Yes, it will. It'll definitely hurt bond prices because the interest that bonds pay looks less attractive when interest rates rise than if interest rates are dropping. So, but if I'm wrong, which I never am, but if I am wrong and interest rates start to drop, you're going to benefit from having utility stocks.
Well, and that's why they make derivatives, options, and you know, calls and puts, so that you can hedge your position and protect against that big swing.
Yeah. But, you know, you ask about what you can do to protect yourself. You definitely need to become a revenue producer for any business you're in. Nobody wants you to show up and say, hey, I'm more overhead. I'd like to be a revenue producer. And you're going to bring more revenue to the business and then ask to take a percentage of that revenue. So everybody out there wants to be adding to that bottom line, not taking away from the bottom line. And that's what employers want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that we've been talking a little bit about Nancy Pelosi. Timothy and I have had we've been like a dog with a bone for the last few weeks, kind of tracking what some of the people on Cap, you know, the insider traders, let's just call it what it is, tracking what the insider trade ghouls are doing. And I'm seeing sort of a resurgence in the, like, you know, financial ambulance chasing, or whatever the reverse of that is. Do you recommend that as a strategy for people?
I don't. I think everyone should have an investment policy, a plan on how they want to manage their money. They need to have income coming off of their investments, because when bad times happen, people less likely or least likely sell those investments because they don't want to give up the income. And you want to have the total return. You want to have income plus growth. And that's what I would do. And you know, I think it should be illegal what goes on in Congress by letting them have these trades. I you know, it's a classic example of insider trading is exactly what they're allowed to do.
Yeah, and of course, there's an information lag there. By the time you find out what their move has been, the market has already shifted to accommodate it, and there's no more upside there for you. What if people are stuck in bonds in these high interest days? What should they be doing?
Well, if they're right now, they should, you know, hope that interest rates are going to drop. I don't think interest rates are going to go that much higher. So I don't think they're at great risk, as long as they're happy getting the income and they have maturity dates that are within 3 to 5 years. If you have maturity dates that are longer than 7 years, you should shorten your maturities. So you should sell those and buy shorter maturity bonds. And that's what I would be doing. And I'd be looking at double B rated bonds, try to stay away from the double A rated corporate bonds, because double A rated bonds are not going to pay you as much as the double B rated bonds are.
And the risk is that is negligible, the difference between them.
Well, it's not negligible. I mean, there is a difference between double A rated and double B rated, but that risk is.
Yeah, but it's offset by the. Yeah.
Yes. And the amount of companies that go bankrupt. Europe that are double B rated is minuscule. So right. I'd be afraid of those, especially if you shorten your maturities, because you can see Ford and General Motors. You can see some really, really great companies that are double B rated. And I would look at those and not be scared from the ratings.
Fantastic advice. It's Ed Batowski, wealth manager to the stars. You can follow him on X at Ed Batowski. And that's Batowski with a Y at the end. Ed, thanks so much. Stay tuned. We've got more State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk after these headlines.